Why are police photographing our license plates?
What are we doing for veterans returning home damaged physically and mentally, suffering from depression, homelessness, and suicide?
Why did the Supreme Court deposit corporate money into our electoral process?
Should we redefine middle class as working poor? Or is it just another Wall Street merger?
What's really behind new voter picture ID laws in certain states?
Why aren't NBC, ABC, CBS, and Fox asking these questions?
Welcome to the Reasonable Voice radio show. I'm your host, Marcello Rolando, the Reasonable Voice. The mission of the Reasonable Voice is to connect the dots between politics and finance, the need for better and more affordable education, our humanity, world peace, and of course, the arts, which we then gladly provide our listeners, the voting public, as informative food for thought to provoke their self-determination and appetite for equal economic opportunity and justice for all without truth decay. The Reasonable Voices are advocates prioritizing education, preserving our history, leading by example for a peaceful and prosperous world by evoking and embracing both creative artists and political unity as solutions to our challenges. Welcome this afternoon to the Reasonable Voices Talk Radio Show. My guest today is an old friend I haven't seen or talked to in a while, but here she is, Dina Gould. Dina Gould is the executive director of the Lighthouse Studio in downtown Charlottesville, Virginia. Dina, how are you?
I'm fine. Thank you, Marcello. How are you?
I'm fine. So good to hear from you and to have you on the show. There's just so much going on. I know you've it's an additional space at the old Vinegar Hill Theater that you are in the process of renovating, opening, using, or what's the plan over there?
At the moment, we purchased the theater in May, and we are using it currently. We have summer camps that are happening, and some of our more advanced students are taking their summer camps there at Vinegar Hill Theater. So there's activity and life back in the theater, and this has given us a good opportunity to test the space before renovating. Our plan is to begin renovation this fall.
And I guess we should tell those who go out of all over the world, so to speak, we should tell people how Lighthouse Studio got started and exactly what it is. The Vinegar Hill portion is the latest expansion, if you will, that's out in front of us that you've begun, as you say. But where did this all come from, a Lighthouse Studio?
Lighthouse began we're almost 17 years old now. Yeah. It was founded by a group of filmmakers, artists, and educators, and they saw a need for, at that time, it was just an after-school program that teaches filmmaking to students. Mm-hmm. And they started with one class called Video Diaries, and now this past year, we taught 71 workshops to about 871 students.
Wow.
So over the years, we've grown significantly and have taken on all sorts of filmmaking.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been a great, just a really nice path, you know.
Yes, it has been, and I've stopped in a few times and met with your students and watched their work. It's really quite impressive, and in some cases, award-winning, yes?
That's right. We've won a number of awards. Every year, students win awards. We enter the films into festivals all over the nation. And last year, we had awards. Last year, work was accepted to 16 different festivals across the United States.
Mm.
And some of those films did win awards, such as Best Documentary at the Los Angeles Film Festival.
Yes.
So we've had, actually over the years, students have won everything from a Cine Eagle, which was Steven Spielberg's first award,
yes,
to gold and bronze medals at the New York Film Festival. So we have a very nice selection in our portfolio. of all different types of films, from horror to animation.
And, you know, it's a wonderful story. It certainly is. It would make a great movie, the history of Lighthouse Studio and you and all the... And you've had collaborators, too. There are people coming in to be a part of, like Big Brothers and Big Sisters. How did that go?
That particular program went very well. We do partner with other nonprofits and schools. And last year, you know, we actually worked with over almost 50 other organizations. So we like to teach filmmaking to students such as those on the Big Brothers Big Sisters program.
Mm-hmm.
And we also make films for other organizations that just want to show their work. It gives our students an opportunity to learn about another organization and, in a way, to take on a client. You know,
yes.
A lot of the work that they do is creative, and they're doing what they want, but it's nice for them to see the other side and actually start to see what it would be like to work in the real world and actually have a client. You know, learning about another nonprofit and the work they're doing. For example, we did some films about epilepsy for the University of Virginia's neurology department, and we interviewed young people who have epilepsy, and our students learned so much from that. I think what they gained from that program and understanding peers who are suffering from epilepsy was just so moving for them.
Yes.
Just sometimes they go into these projects and they think they're just doing the film side of it, and they do learn about filmmaking with every, as you know, with every situation you're in, you learn something new, but then they actually gain so much more by others and their stories.
Yes. I mean, that's in large part the magic of movie making, because there is all of the technique in front of and behind the camera and all the considerations and how the collaboration and how you pull it all together. But at some point, if you're lucky, you are moved by, you become both the partner in the creation, but also a partner with the audience in being moved by the story itself. And that's, I think that's it's a tremendous side effect, if you will, especially for young people. But I mean, I get that still, too. You have to keep one's objectivity and be clear that you're making it, as I would tell people I work with. Remember, we're making the film for the people who see it. That's the point. But it's okay between takes or after a wrap when you are so moved by the story that you feel honored to have been a part of its creation. I guess that's what I'm saying. And I think children can grasp that faster than some adults, maybe. Anyway,
right.
How about, I mean, I know I do want to talk so much about Lighthouse. How are you doing personally? How's life? How's the husband and family and all?
We're doing well. My twins are 16, and they're
God.
Driving.
Oh, my God.
We've entered a whole new phase.
Yes, it has been a while since we've seen one another. Whoa.
It has. That's right. Things, you know, it's just amazing that time flies, as a, you know, the old saying. But that's certainly been a change for us, though. They are able to drive to their different sports practices, and of course there's some social fun things that they do as well. And then my youngest is 12, and he's doing extremely well too. We have a lot of sports going on in our family, so that's you know, one of the highlights. And we're just busy, as I think most people are, pulled in many directions.
Yes, I know the feeling. What did Lighthouse, how did you connect with them? What was I read about the Cine Youth Chicago International Festival? How was that?
That went very well. We've sent material to the Cine Youth Festival in Chicago for a number of years now, and they, for the past 3 years, have selected some of our films to show. And you know, every year it just depends. What's so interesting about these festivals is that they all differ. They're looking for different things, which is great for us, because students are creating so many different types of films through Lighthouse.
Yes.
And oftentimes a film that will get into Cine Youth Chicago Film Festival will not get into the Los Angeles Film Festival.
Interesting.
The LA Film Festival might choose a music video,
yes,
which is something they do tend to choose quite a bit. And the New York Film Festival seems to especially like documentaries.
Yes.
So, but even, you know the festival somewhat, but you still don't know what they're going to decide to showcase. So it's, every year it's interesting.
Yes. Even Future Wave in Seattle, I believe, and then, of course, the Sun Valley Festival, they're all looking for their genre, their little niche. So I guess it is a challenge. Do you being familiar with the festivals, do you base your submissions on that?
We do, yes.
Mm-hmm.
But we do submit as much as we're able to, you know, just to make sure. But we certainly, and some festivals will immediately say that they're about documentaries only and
mm-hmm.
making change in the world, you know. So then you certainly, then give you a good indication of what they want. Of course, you target in that case.
Mm-hmm.
But for some of the larger festivals that are known to us, we do try to submit as much work as we can.
Sure. Well, it's I know the organizations, especially in Central Virginia, are certainly taking note. The Albemarle County Rotary Club, they're just I think just one of the proofs of how Lighthouse and you are and your students are impacting. I mean, when you send your work out to a festival, your reach is even larger, of course, and awards, of course, but also closer to home, that there are organizations that, you know, the old saying, a prophet is not appreciated in his own home, and yet I think Lighthouse is growing with those kinds of collaborations and recognitions from local community organizations, and by local, I mean, you know, Central Virginia, Albemarle County, Charlottesville. What are some of those most memorable for you collaborations or connections or sponsors that have helped you in this, what seems like to me, a incredibly full speed ahead growth of Lighthouse?
Mm-hmm. Well, you mentioned the Albemarle County Rotary Club. They have been very good to us. We started with small grants with them several years ago, and then last year applied for their largest grant, which is tied into a golf tournament that they put on every year. And we were the first arts organization to actually be chosen for this grant,
mm-hmm.
and which we were thrilled about, of course.
Yes.
And I do enjoy going to the Rotary Club from time to time. I speak there a couple of times every year,
mm-hmm.
and I have gotten to know several of the members, and I think it's just a wonderful organization.
Yes.
And their support has been significant for us. We have a lot of individuals who support Lighthouse and foundations as well, and we wouldn't be here without that support in the community. And more recently, we have also received more support from corporations, which is great.
Mm.
So corporations such as Crutchfield have supported us for a number of years now.
Yes.
But we are getting more support from organizations such as Allison Partners and QIM and Ting and Merkel, and I could go on and on.
Yes.
Our upcoming film festival is on August 28th, and we've just put out our invitation, and we're just extremely pleased to have so much support from the community.
Mm-hmm. You know, students who study filmmaking, make films, including for clients through Lighthouse. What's after Lighthouse for them? I know you've got some university congratulations to come to students who've gone on. Tell us a couple of those stories.
We just had a class last a camp last week. They showed their films, and I looked at the mentors, and I was introducing and thanking them, you know, in front of the audience, and I realized that three of the four mentors were former Lighthouse students.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. And two are studying in California, one at the Hollywood School. He actually just graduated there, and he's heading back to L.A. this week.
Wow.
Another young woman is at USC, and another person, the third mentor, is in New York studying film. So one of the things I love about Lighthouse is that our mentors come, our former students come back to mentor, which is just, it's great, you know, to keep it all sort of in the family, so to speak. And we do stay in touch with our alumni. You know, we have them at Wesleyan, and they've gone on to Bryn Mawr and Georgetown, NYU, as I mentioned, USC. I mean, they're all over, and many study film.
Yes.
But they also will choose film as a second major and mix it up a bit. But they usually tell us that they tend to continue to use film in some way.
Yes.
And I've had a number of students, one in particular, she was telling me that she has had a couple of internships. She's been successful in receiving them because, and they told her it's because of your film experience.
Wow.
She said she stands out on an application because she's able to do a little bit of film for the organization. So, you know, it's a growing medium, and it's a way of communication now. So it's a very useful tool to have.
Well, you know, we're going to run out of time, so I want to make certain we talk a little more about Vinegar Hill, and of course, tell us how we can be a part of supporting Lighthouse.
Well, we are in the next, we call it phase two now, which is renovating the theater, and we are still raising funds for that. So we have received $300,000 worth of matching gifts from the Perry Foundation and the Mary Morton Parsons Foundation. Those two gifts combined equal $300,000, and we need to raise another $400,000. So that's what we're working on right now, and we would love to hear from anyone who's interested in supporting. Every gift matters, and I think the easiest way to get in touch with us is to take a look at our website. Our contact information is there. I'd be happy to have a conversation with anyone who has questions or would like to have a tour and or learn more about our plans.
And give us that website, if you will, Dina.
It's lighthousestudio.org.
Okay, and we can go there and pretty much find out where you are in artistically and as far as the financial donations that are requested and what they go to, yes?
That's right, yes.
And tell us just a tad, with a little bit of time we have left, tell us a little bit more about Vinegar Hill. I never went there when it was a movie house, but I was sad to hear that it closed and then just elated when I found out you had bought it. What are some more of your plans? We only have a couple of minutes, but can you give us some hints?
Sure. In addition to teaching, which is our primary focus, as you know, we now will be able to show the students' work and screen it in a proper theater. And this is something we've been doing this summer, and it's just been fantastic. We actually have people who will come in at 2:30. They know there's a 30-minute screening of the work that the students have done during summer camp, and they come in and enjoy popcorn and watch the movies. So we're, this is in part, you know, we're hoping, we want this to be for the community.
Sure.
We, as I mentioned, we partner with a number of other organizations, so we're looking to show the work we do together and bring organizations together for these screenings. We are also looking at getting additional films in from time to time that will be things like interesting documentaries, educational. I'm sure there will be a few screenings, I hope, that are new filmmakers who have new films that they want to screen for the public. We would encourage that and encourage filmmakers who are wanting to take a look at a rough cut and get a group together and get some audience back. So we see this very much. I'm talking specifically about the theater aspect of Vinegar Hill. What is also happening, that we are building an addition, which will be our teaching studios. That's what it needs to happen this fall. So, but the theater will remain intact.
Fantastic. It is just so great. It's all so beautiful. And it's a, you know, it's a straight line. It takes in the entire gamut of filmmaking. You teach these young people how to do it. They learn the techniques. They work with one another. They work with clients. And then ultimately to have a screening, a public screening, in a real movie house. I mean, it's just wonderful, Dina. My hat off to you and all those who've recognized what you can do and what you bring to the community and to so many young people. As you say, it isn't just future filmmakers, but what they do because they know about filmmaking. We're going to have to run. We've been talking to Dina Gould, who is the very delightful, wonderful, and accomplished executive director of Lighthouse Studio, Dina Gould. And Dina, I wish you all the best for Lighthouse and everyone associated with you and it. And thank you again so much for being on the show today.
Thank you.
And my pleasure. Bye now.
Bye.
All right, we're going to be back very quickly. Just take a break. We're saying goodbye to Dina, but we do have another guest today. Stay with us. This is Marcello Rolando, your host of the Reasonable Voices Talk Radio Show. Stay with us.
And now, another film rental discovery.
Welcome to the Indie Film Minute. To really enjoy the great beauty, we have to abandon some of the film appreciation skills Hollywood taught us in our youth. This feast for the senses does not benefit from yearning for narrative comprehension. Is there a message? Yes, but it unfolds within languid flow, suffused in visceral intellect and extraordinary beauty. Set in Rome, the film follows aging author Jep Gambardella as he seeks motivation and meaning. He had experienced great success as a young man by writing an acclaimed novel that propelled him to a rarefied social status. At 65, will he write again? His is a privileged life filled with beauty, sensuality, and abandon. He even has a friend with keys to all of the beautiful places in Rome. A nice way to impress a date, no? And if one's life is full of such blessings, shouldn't inspiration always be within reach? But there we go again, searching for narrative thread. The music, visceral beauty, extraordinary intellect, and seductive energy are sufficient to propel us on this sumptuous journey for its own sake. Aptly named, The Great Beauty is a phenomenon, drawing on such disparate influences as Fellini and David Lynch to enhance the journey of film as art. The Great Beauty, or in its native Italian, La Grande Bellezza. Not in theaters, discovery through rental.
Welcome back to the Reasonable Voices Talk Radio Show. My second guest today is an old friend, and she's been on the show before, Cassidy McMillan. Cassidy, how are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, it's always a pleasure. Cassidy is a filmmaker, actress, and she's a public speaker. She's the director, producer, and writer you may know her best as for Bullies and Friends. It's a documentary film, feature-length film, that we, Cassidy and I, have talked about before on air. It is an award-winning film. It does what I would hope we would all like to be a part of doing, and that is protecting our children, in particular, from bullies, but in addition to that, also teaching the bullies how not to be bullies. Cassidy, does that tell it? Does that launch us off?
Yes, very much so, yes.
Okay. Tell me, speaking of launching, I know you, there are a number of new things, some you knew about. Of course, nothing happens overnight. You've been working this for months, but you've just launched a new joint fundraiser venture with Amanda Todd Legacy and National Voices for, what is it, equality, education, and enlightenment. Tell us what all that means. That sounds impressive.
We're very excited that we're teaming with these two great organizations that we've been working with in our joint efforts to prevent bullying and youth suicide.
Yes.
As you and I have spoken about before, according to the Centers for Disease Control, they state bullying among children is a major public health problem, along with the fact that the correlation between bullying, which is harassment, really, and the harassment bullying with child suicide, where we have children as young as 9 years old ending their life because they're being bullied. And the problem has become such a silent epidemic. The CDC statistics now show that suicide is the third leading cause of death among children ages 10 and up.
That is
so
astounding.
It's staggering. And, you know, it's a preventable thing, and we just need to get solutions out there. And that's why I produced and directed the film Bullies and Friends, because while the documentary profiles bullying incidents, specifically a 14-year-old girl's suicide due to being bullied that led to a precedent-setting court case, and through telling that story and others, the thing that makes our film really unique is that we provide solutions to bullying to educators, parents, and most importantly, kids themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And so with the film, you've gotten just tremendous word of mouth, critical acclaim, and from that, a distribution company has offered they want to distribute the film worldwide.
Mm-hmm.
Which we're totally thrilled about, is just that right now the distribution companies, well, distribution companies in general, they don't pay the distribution cost to get the film prepped.
Uh-huh.
So in order to raise these funds, that's why we're reaching out to the public in a crowdfunding campaign where everyone from across the globe can pitch in, you know, whether it's $5, $25, and we have gift levels at every amount from $5 and up. And so we're teaming up with National Voices for Equality, Education, and Enlightenment and the Amanda Todd Legacy Foundation, both of which also work on bullying and suicide prevention, to raise these final funds for this film's release.
Hmm.
So with the campaign, when people make a contribution to then get film gift perks, which the film provides, then from that, our film will be donating a percentage of that as well to the organization.
Ah, excellent. So how is it going? Are people responding? Is it because I know, you know, you say that I understand this, that distributing companies don't pay to prep the film to get ready to distribute it. They pay to distribute it when it's ready. So the people who don't make films don't necessarily know all the various expenses that go into just the administrative costs of even raising funds. So how is it going? How is it progressing? What can we do? What can we tell the listeners to help you?
That they can go to bulliesandfriends.com or our GoFundMe page at gofundme.com/bulliesandfriends.
Mm-hmm.
And at either of those two sites, we have the fundraiser where they can donate any amount with their credit card or bank card and securely donate and pick their gift level, you know, so we have gifts at $5, $10, $25. You know, we have award-winning book authors who donated their novels through ebook form. So if someone donates $10, we call it our Teen 10, they can be part of the campaign and mm-hmm. they'll get the mystery novel book that is an award-winning book. And, you know, in addition to other film perks, you know, all the $10. And we have Emmy award-winning actresses who donated a signed script with signatures from like 17 soap opera stars, so people can purchase that. And
mm-hmm.
so it's just, you know, amazing gifts. People can join the film as an associate producer. And so we've just launched the joint campaign starting today, actually. So we're just getting the word out there and contacting the media and let the public know of our combined work together, it's really unprecedented that we're bringing really three outlets together. You know, the Amanda Todd Legacy, of course, founded by Amanda Todd's mother, Jo, after her daughter Amanda committed suicide due to bullying, and National Voices. I'm actually on their board of directors on a volunteer basis there in Miami. I handle their communications. And so the film also, once it's released, will be doing work with these two organizations as well, you know, getting into schools and having special events with these two great organizations that we've also been working with prior campaigns.
Sure. It's a tremendously important collaboration, too, because it's indicative of more people beginning and more organizations beginning to understand the importance of what you have been trying to tell us all along, especially with the film, your film, Bullies and Friends, that this is an epidemic. It is happening to our children. There are other groups that are trying to make a difference, but I think when it comes to our children, we need to all come together and figure out how to solve this. I even talked with a psychologist in an interview not terribly long ago who said even at the university level, it's been proven that those first two or three months of the year, of a brand new year, young freshman ladies are stalked, that they've discovered, they've run the numbers, they've figured it out, that they're actually, there's a focus on these new young people starting a new year. How does that translate into the children you are talking of? You've spoken of nine-year-olds committing suicide because they're being bullied, but does something like that correlate with your age group in going back to school? Is there a new focus or a temptation to do more bullying or to be targeted by bullies as you go back into a new school year?
At the beginning of every school year, we found that many of the students have trepidation about it because, yes, they don't know what the new school year will bring. It's like maybe not all of their friends will be attending their school when the new school year starts. Or, you know, maybe they just moved to a new town or they just left middle school and now they're starting high school. Okay. And so, especially like for, you know, ninth graders, it's like when they're starting in and all the other grade levels are older.
Yes.
It can be even harder because, you know, they don't know the routine, they don't know where anything is, and on top of that, sure, you know, the older kids sometimes will pick on the younger ones, or even just within their own grade level, they will, or just within their own group. It depends on what type of bullying it is, but certainly at the start of the school year, there's always more fear. You know, because they don't know what classes they're going to be assigned in. And, you know, is that person that always harassed them last year going to be in one of their classes again? So it's a very nerve-wracking time, especially, and it can just start off the new school year on a very bad note. So it's really important for parents to really talk to their children every day after school and to ask open-ended questions. I always advise parents to, instead of just saying, oh, was your day at school good?
Yes.
Because most all kids most of the time are going to say, yeah, it's good, no, it's fine, whatever, yeah. Mm-hmm. And, you know, go in their room and shut the door.
Yes.
And from talking, I've talked to tens of thousands of kids at schools, and, you know, they've said that if they are being harassed or bullied, they often won't tell their parents or an adult because somehow they feel shamed as if they did something wrong, have someone pick on them or insult them. So it's more important for parents to say, hey, you know, what happened in school today? And, you know, what was the best thing that happened today and why? And what was the worst thing that happened today and why?
Excellent questions. Yes. Yes. You give them a range. You give them choices. But most of all, it's not just a yes or no question. It starts a conversation, and it gives the ability to have that conversation on either side of the bookends. It's marvelous, Cassidy. I remember, you know, I've always said two things when you and I talk. This habit of bullying is something that reaches well into adult life and at work and, you know, in the military and whatever. But the best way to solve it for society is to do what you are doing, what Bullies and Friends is doing, and that is to reach it at the level of elementary school and middle school and high school age, so that as we grow older and grow into college, whether we've been a bully or we've been the target of a bully, we have been re-educated about how harmful this can be. I mean, when children commit suicide because they're afraid to go to school or afraid of people at school, this is so incredibly serious. We all have to take it seriously and listen. That's the second thing I always say. I know you've heard me say, listen with more than your ears. You've got to watch your child and pay attention. I've dated women who had children, and one young lady in particular, I remember, she just said, I can't even come in the house with a new bruise without you asking me about it. And I said, that's right. I want to know, where did that bruise come from? But you do have to do that. And this same young lady, well, she was 6 or 7 or 8 or something, and she just seemed so unhappy because she thought her best friend was so popular and she wasn't. And I won't go into a long thing about it, but I found that I was, first of all, shocked, because she was so delightful. How she could think people didn't love her was astounding to me. And I explained it to her in a way that I know was sincere, because I was just so shocked. But too often, you know, everybody's busy. You and I were talking about that before we got on the air. A parent or a teacher might just brush that aside as an unimportant call for help. And you can't. You've got to hear what they say when they say it. Okay, enough of me. Tell me more. We talked about going back to school. That is just, again, that's generational. I mean, it's not an age. We have to start early. Let's brag a little about the film, because I know you were just nominated. Didn't quite work out, but you were just nominated for the prestigious federal, what is it, SAMHSA Voice Award for the documentary film. Tell us how that went. Yes.
Yeah, we were thrilled to be nominated for the federal SAMHSA Voice Award in Film. The Voice Awards focus on media projects and other projects that project positive and solution-based ideas for, you know, mental health situations, and in this case, focusing on suicide prevention, which our film focuses deeply on. And so we were thrilled to be nominated. Just that due to still fundraising, we just couldn't get the final cut in, because we just didn't have the film's funding set, you know, to be able to get everything through at the studios in Hollywood. But, you know, we're thrilled to be nominated, and, you know, our film has won, you know, the United Nations Association Impact Film Award in the past. And like I said, we're just working to make a difference. And our goal is, if we can prevent one boy or girl from taking their life due to bullying, then, you know, we're considering it a success. And we know we've already had successes in schools, or we did preview screenings of the film, where we've had kids come up to us and say, you know, I was thinking about committing suicide, but after seeing your film, now I realize the devastation, you know, they're like, we see what would happen to my family, and wow, that I'd be leaving my best friend behind, and my mom and dad or sibling, you know. So we're working to get that to all schools, to get the film to all schools so we can help kids, because every time I hear of another child taking their life because they're harassed or bullied, it just really just sinks my heart, and we really want to get this film out globally to the world.
Remind us again, how do we get a hold of you to invite you to come to our schools and talk to our students?
They can just email info@bulliesandfriends.com.
And you pretty much travel wherever you're asked and speak at the schools?
Yeah, I mean, as long as, you know, the funding is available. I mean, you know, if anywhere I can get to, I'll go out to.
Okay.
You know, I've flown across the country, you know, from California to Maine to wherever. And I also do Skype discussions with schools as well. So if it was like, yeah, if they were like, oh, you know, maybe, okay, you can't get up to Alaska or somewhere in Canada or wherever across the globe, you know, I'll certainly get on Skype and have, you know, classroom sessions as well with students and teachers.
And the students are quite responsive to this, as I understand. They, once someone gets them to open up and talk about it, you really hear some, well, you hear the story, you hear the truth.
Absolutely, you know, because sometimes they might not feel comfortable talking to their teacher about it. But with me coming in and saying, you know, yes, here's our film and this is what we're working on, and I've talked with all of these other kids, all of these age ranges and from everywhere, and they've been bullied and harassed, you know, from star athletes to fantastic musicians to writers to whatever. It doesn't matter. All kids can be subjected to bullying. It's just a matter of if they're targeted by someone else. So once kids hear that and understand that, oh, it's not just me. Mm-hmm. And really, it doesn't have anything to do with me. It has to do with the bully.
Yes.
And everybody else has been through it, you know, or going through it, you know, then they step forward to tell their story. You know, that there's definitely strength in numbers, and they feel like that they're safe so that they can step forward and talk about what's going on with them.
Yes. I don't know. I don't know why this happens, but I do know it does happen. I've seen it. I've experienced it. I was bullied as a child, and I was fortunate because I wasn't very patient with being bullied, but mostly I was fortunate because there was a principal who happened to catch an eye of something, and she came right up to me and said, I want to know what just happened, and she didn't tolerate. She had zero tolerance for bullies, but not all children have that luxury. That's why I say teachers and parents who are already overloaded with life as well as responsibilities, but still somehow one has to see and hear and sense and question. And like you said, those great questions that ask, so tell me the best thing and the worst thing. That's just a great approach to it, because then you give them, they have the bookends, they have the gamut, they can fill in the blanks. And it's not just a yes or no. One last thing we must touch on. I know we have to go, but cyberbullying. We can't leave without you telling us the dangers of cyberbullying, because that's when we leave our children alone with their devices, 21st century devices, and we think they're doing homework, and perhaps they are, but sometimes it's not safe to be online. We know that. Tell us something. What can we do?
It's so important for parents to really be aware of what their children are reading, whether on their computer, on their tablet, on their smartphones, because, you know, it's 24/7 where they can be getting harassed from other kids, you know, being
yes.
threatened, being insulted. You know, I mean, they can be doing a work project on their laptop and an incoming instant message can come in, you know, telling them that they're awful or whatever the case may be. So it's important for parents to really know what's going on there, and if their kids have a Facebook account, that the parents have the password to it and they know what's going on, what's being said both ways. As well as to make sure that their kids maybe aren't saying negative things to other kids as well.
Yes.
So it's really important for parents to have that discussion with their kids ahead of time and just say, you know, look, I'm not monitoring you. I don't think you're bad. I want to make sure you're okay. And to tell them ahead of time things that can go on. You know, because if you tell kids, hey, be aware of other kids who might try to insult or harass you, and know that the issue lies with that child, not with you, and that you can tell me and, you know, maybe share an experience they had from their childhood. So
yes.
when it happens, the child will recognize it for what it is, and then will, you know, tell their parents what's going on.
Okay, excellent. Cassidy McMillan, always an incredible, informative, educational, and moving conversation every time we talk about you and Bullies and Friends and what the two of you and now your new collaborations and joint ventures are doing to help keep our children safe. give us the Bullies and Friends. It's an easy one, but give it to us again, the website, so we know where we can go to find out more, to invite you to come, and also to make donations.
Everyone can just go to www.bulliesandfriends.com. So bulliesandfriends.com.
Thank you so much, Cassidy, for being on the show. And I wish you all the well in all that you do. You know that, right?
Yes, I do, my friend. Thank you.
You're quite welcome. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Stay with us as we'll be right back with a final comment from The Reasonable Voice.
And now, another film rental discovery.
Welcome to the Indie Film Minute. Unfinished Song may well have been influenced by 2007's Young at Heart, a wonderful documentary that introduced us to an elderly choir singing modern-day pop songs. That film deserves a look itself. However, today's feature is a scripted drama joyously swimming in the same water. Arthur, played by old favorite Terrence Stamp, and Marion by perennial master Vanessa Redgrave, are long-married polar opposites. Arthur is as sour as Marion is joyous. He curses all the elements of the day while Marion revels in them, laughing all the way. But boy, do they love each other. Marion has joined a competitive senior choir, seeking the opportunity to express her own voice and share in the fun, while Arthur smokes his bitter fags and waits impatiently for practices or performances to end. When Marion passes away, Arthur is left in desolate isolation. Redemption comes in the form of the charming choir director who works to bring him into the fold of the choir community. Savvy? Sure. But we choose to emulate Marion, enjoying every moment of this lovely little film, so full of the music and emotion craved by our senses. Unfinished Song. Not in theaters. Discovery through rental.
Hi, I'm Cassidy McMillan. I'm the director and writer of the documentary film Bullies and Friends.
Because I never would have wanted any of them to be scared.
A child of 14 would take her own life because of bullying.
Bullies and Friends tells the true story of a 14-year-old girl named Dawn Marie, who, after being bullied and threatened with death by three girls at her school, hung herself in her bedroom with her dog's leash. In her suicide note, Dawn Marie named her three tormentors. The incident sparked a groundbreaking investigation that led to the precedent-setting court case, where for the first time in North America, teens were made to stand trial for bullying.
When my sister Brenda and I first saw the documentary Bullies and Friends, we knew we wanted to get involved however we could.
Bullying has become a worldwide epidemic. Thousands of children from across the globe have committed suicide due to bullying.
As a nurse, I've seen bullicide have horrific effects on the family and the friends.
According to the Centers for Disease Control, bullying among school-aged children is a major public health problem. Over the past 10 years, the occurrence of bullying-related suicides across the globe has shown the connection between bullying and suicides. Suicide is the third leading cause of death among children. Tragically, almost every other week from across the globe, another child commits suicide due to bullying. These are only several of the children who have taken their lives due to being bullied. Seth Walsh, Stephen Urey, Carlos Vigil, Rebecca Ann Sedwick, Phoebe Prince, Carl Joseph Walker Hoover, Kelly Yeomans, Bart Pelos, Jasmine McLean. One child is too many. We need to take action now.
You can get involved by joining this film's cause of bullying and bullicide prevention.
I first heard about Dawn Marie's story on The Oprah Winfrey Show. I was horrified to learn that a 14-year-old girl would feel so terrified that she felt her only escape was to take her own life.
I reached out to Dawn Marie's mom, Cindy. Cindy and I both felt that telling Dawn Marie's story would help prevent another boy or girl from taking their life due to bullying.
Bullies and Friends not only recounts this powerful story, but it offers solutions to bullying, to schools, parents, kids, and communities. In the film, we have interviews with the nation's top bullying experts and an exclusive interview with the judge who presided over and handed down the precedent-setting ruling, as well as interviews with teens involved in the case, including the main teen girl brought to trial for bullying. In making Bullies and Friends, I've traveled to schools and youth organizations across North America, where I've worked with thousands of kids, hundreds of teachers, parents, educators, counselors, and other community leaders in my research on bullying and bullicides.
We were really struck by how this film actually presents solutions to bullying. The film is emotional and deeply affecting.
I'm hoping that Cassidy's work can save lives.
Brendan and I set up a special film screening of Bullies and Friends that was just for parents, teachers, and kids so that they could all talk about the film afterwards. Bullies and Friends opened the dialogue on bullying and bullying prevention. The kids and their parents at our film festival screening really wanted to show it at their school. We can really relate to how much Cassidy has sacrificed as a filmmaker to make this project happen. This film can help so many kids, and it's already making a huge difference.
At some of the screenings at schools, students have come up to us afterward and said that prior to seeing the film, they were this close to committing suicide due to bullying they were experiencing, but said that after they saw this film, they knew that someone cared, they saw the devastation their death would cause, and now said that they would seek help instead. And that, to us, has made the long journey in making this film more than worth it.
We've had people say to us that they want to help prevent bullicide, but they don't know what to do. Helping this film raise money and get out into the world is how you can help.
The film has been met with tremendous positive response from schools, organizations, and events throughout North America where we've screened early versions of the film. We went ahead and held preview screenings due to audience demand from schools.
This film has achieved distribution with a global distribution company. The company is patiently standing by, waiting for the film, but we must meet all the funding requirements. Know that you will be involved with a film with an important cause already slated for worldwide release. This campaign's funding is needed for all the pre-distribution requirements to get this film released across the globe. Costs include multi-platforms of distribution, closed captioning, sound mixing, and the many other production costs.
Only a small percentage of independent films get selected by a distributor for worldwide release. We're very proud that Bullies and Friends was able to achieve this amazing accomplishment.
This is an all-or-nothing campaign. If we don't raise the total funds needed, this bullying prevention film cannot be released to the schools, parents, kids, and communities across the globe.
This film is a grassroots movement that is helping kids and communities. Any amount you contribute is huge to us.
Every dollar helps in this campaign to help us prevent bullying and bullicides.
We're asking you to go donate today.
We have great perks, including being among the first to receive the DVD when the film is released. Be listed in the film's credits special thanks section, which means you'll be listed on the film's IMDb page, and the exclusive opportunity to be listed as an associate producer or co-executive producer of this important film.
We're also including a needed stretch campaign to fund the film's bullying prevention outreach tour. We need you to share this campaign and its cause with your family,
amongst your friends,
and anyone you know who's been affected by bullying.
Email, through social networks. If you have any friends in the press and media, please let them know about Bullies and Friends and how helping this film get made can help kids all around the world. We thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you for continuing to listen to, support, and share the Reasonable Voice Blog Talk Radio with family and friends, especially online. We enjoy hearing from you, and in response, yes, we are now accepting new company and business advertisers and welcoming organizations seeking to be one of our sponsors. So please do continue to email us at thereasonablevoice@gmail.com. However, if you prefer to simply make a donation, your donations are greatly appreciated and can be made through PayPal by clicking on the donate button found at the top of the homepage of the Reasonable Voice. Website.
Thank you for joining us today to make every day as reasonable as possible. We hope you will download and share our downloadable podcasts. I'm Marcello Rolando, the Reasonable Voice, hoping you will become one of the reasonable voices heard round the world.